introduce our main speaker for this evening, Chris E. from San Diego.
My name is Christopher. I'm an alcoholic. These for me? Two-fisted. Anybody do that before? Wait a minute. I don't like these crowns. Anyway, grateful to be here. Larry Lay, thank you for asking me. George, it's your fault. I'm blaming you tonight. Oh, thank you. I grew up in an Irish Catholic family. I was a middle child. I had two older brothers and two younger sisters. My father would line us up in the bathtub and shave our heads, and I was always the last. I'm already covered in hair, and they haven't even touched me yet, and I hated that shit. I've always had a problem with authority. Somebody was mentioning that earlier. Gun, a badge, boss, anybody with a clipboard, as my friend Mark would say. I can adjust this. Thank you so much. So a little bit of an icebreaker here. My only original thought in AA, how many old-timers does it take to screw in a light bulb? None. They suggest the newcomers do it. Which leads me to believe that the newcomer is the most important person in AA, or there would be no light up in here right now. Right, Kevin? Where is Kevin? Congratulations. So I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. Came up in the 60s. I hated the 70s. So I immediately took it out on the 80s. What's a guy to do, you know? Paid dearly for it in the 90s, and now it's a whole new millennium. I remember my earliest memories. I remember being in a crib. It was dark. It was cold. I was alone, and I was scared. I remember I broke into my father's workshop when I was really young, and I drank a quart of turpentine. Thought I'd do a little social drinking. And they rushed me to the hospital, cut all my clothes off me, pumped my stomach. When I was five, my hand was crushed by a brick. We were playing hide-and-go-seek, and I climbed up this thing that vines grow through, and there was this big cinder block on top, and they yanked on my legs. You're caught, you're it. And it slid off, and it hit me in the head on the way down and landed on my hand. And so I was familiar with hospitals from the gate. I remember having an operation on the roof of my mouth when I was about seven, and I woke up and I was upside down. And then I woke up again and I was cross-eyed. And then the third time I woke up, I could see straight. So obviously they had medicated me, and I had that original feeling of narcotics. It's an AA meeting, but I've done every drug known to man. But nothing treated me like vodka. We talked about that earlier. Anybody pass warm vodka through their nose before? You're my hero, bro. Nothing feels like that. And as horrid as that is, to do it the next day, it's like, what the? So back to Michigan, back to Detroit. I remember the riots of 67, 68, and 69. Each summer it would erupt, National Guard rolling down our main drag. I remember the feeling of, I wouldn't call it frightening, but it was very disturbing to watch your neighborhoods get destroyed like that. I remember as a young man all of the assassinations. I grew up on Bugs Bunny and fucking Watergate. I mean, who wouldn't be confused? Now, I hadn't started drinking until I was probably about 12, and I think I actually dropped acid before I ever drank anything. But I remember the first time I really got drunk, we raided all the liquor cabinets in the neighborhood and mixed all that together. And my friends seemed to go home normal, and I woke up in the field down the street, didn't know how I got there, and the birds were chirping, and the sun was coming up, and my tongue's fused to the roof of my mouth, and I felt like hell, and couldn't wait to do it again. Now, there's a line in the book that applies way before I was clinically alcoholic. I was born this way, but it says, is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest some satisfaction out of this godforsaken place? I added that part. If he only manages well. I was always trying to manage, to live up to something, to look a certain way, so that I didn't get the heat, so that I could be anonymous. Seemed to always bother me that I was a little bit different than the kids that I was hanging out with. They'd go home normal. We got to high school, and they didn't have an ice hockey team, so we started one. I was 14, and me and my friend Steven put a sign up in the office. If you want to play hockey, sign here. And we took second in state the first year, and they had to make us varsity, and we stole all the basketball players' girlfriends, and they hated us for that. And then Steve, after a year, moved. His father got transferred, and I remember the feeling I had of having lost such a companion. It was horrible to me. I was drinking over that stuff. Weekends, usually, I was I don't know what it is about treasures. I'm the treasurer of a meeting. I sit on the board of board of directors as the treasurer of one of the best community health centers in San Diego to date. I was the class treasurer of my senior class. And I don't know what's up with that, because I couldn't be trusted with anything for a long time. And the only reason why I made it is because I was hungover and stayed home the day that they had the vote, and all the friends, the four of us that had gotten together to basically rain hell on these people, they all got busted in the parking lot for smoking pot, so I didn't get caught. So I was the only one that got elected out of that little crew that we had going on. Not important, but just part of the swirling of things that happen as you're coming up. I had a difficult time with feeling a part of. I know what it's like to be in a room full of 100 million people and feel alone. Anybody understand this? You're dying, but you're wondering how you look. Anybody do that? That's like clinically crazy, you know? That's delusion. I didn't understand these words in this book until somebody had described them to me, and I started piecing this stuff together. I made horrible decisions. I would take the first job that came along, first girlfriend that came along, paid attention. That is not the way to go about going through life, you know, as far as planning a future. And anyway, the drinking progressed rather quickly. I'm gonna talk about the 70s a little bit here. There were seven deaths associated with the 70s, and that's why I hated them. My first girlfriend was killed in a car accident with a good friend of ours. They had been drinking and ran off the road, hit a tree. I had a cousin that did the same thing. There were seven people that it was all associated with alcohol, and the last pair that were killed were my parents. Guy going the wrong way down a divided highway in Michigan, hit him head on, and And I'm going to talk about my father now. Was a good man. And this is some of the feeling that I was having and why I was drinking, because there's no way I'm going to measure up to this man. I'm already stealing the neighborhood cookies, blaming it on homegirl's brother. You know, and all army men swear, and I get caught, and she's washing my mouth out with soap, and she comes in later patting my head, "No, you'll never do that again." And I'm like foaming at the mouth, picking shit out of my teeth with a sheet, you know. And I'm not agreeing that I'm never going to swear again. I'm agreeing that I ain't never going to get caught again. And I lived that way for a long time. You know, we get caught for everything. Graduated high school, semi-miserable. Parents had just died. I applied for a job with the federal government, of all people. And I got the job. I worked for the Federal Aviation Administration. And I was in a job program that helped land airplanes at 3 degrees and in the middle of the runway. And I'm 19 years old. And I'm working with people that are absolutely brilliant. And I get this feeling again. Man, there's no way. Don't they know? Are they? And then the second thought was, well, they must have found out about the past and felt sorry for me. So I'm not cutting myself a break at all. I'm taking it all and I'm putting it inside and I'm not talking about it. And I'm drinking over it. And I'm the kind of drinker that I'll drink a pint of vodka and throw the evidence away because you don't want to get caught with that. In half a minute, you know, it's a really violent way to drink. That went on for a long time. So anyway, Ronald Reagan fired 16,000 air traffic controllers that year, well, about a year and a half into this gig, and they eliminated the whole job program I was in. So when I wrote my four-step, he was the first name on that list. And I'm not going to try and swear tonight, but in my mind right now, I'm saying the same thing I said then. He didn't know who I was. How could I take that personally? You know, delusion. Anyway, I had always played music. When I was about 10 years old, I got a little guitar out of a garage sale for $20, and I wore the frets off it. And I didn't realize what I was doing, but I was trying to satisfy for that hole I had inside. But I would make these things up. I didn't learn other people's music. I would make up my own. And that would serve me well later on in life, but I was doing it to survive, basically. And I ran into some people that we started doing these things together and writing all this stuff. And there was a little collection of a little crew. We started our own little fanzine. We'd go to shows together. We'd have bands from other areas of the country come, and we'd do shows for them. And I started getting some recognition, and this goes back to the being in a room full of 500 people that are actually admiring what you're doing and still feeling alone, still feeling like I don't measure up, not able to enjoy that whole process. These are the shackles of alcoholism. And it would take a long time to come to terms with the deaths, the broken promises, the missed opportunities. I still struggle with that today, but I don't drink over it. Anyway, a couple of the people that were in that crew went on to do some really amazing things, and I had played a part in fostering these people, helping them. We'd take runaways in, let them live with us, teach them how to play, make a backdrop, So always some artistic, creative stuff going on. And that was really the only thing that was saving my ass at that time. And I got arrested a couple times. Yeah, we'll talk about those. But I knew that I was in trouble, and I would have to go see a judge, and I knew I had a drinking problem. I knew from a long time before that, but here it was, the heat was on. So I looked AA up in the phone book. Ma Bell, Michigan Bell, carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to me, and I started going to meetings. I was 23 years old. And I didn't do anything. I just went to meetings. I didn't drink. That went on for a year. And I remember the day I took the first drink, the strange mental blank spots before the first drink. And I only drank one and threw the evidence under the wherever. And it bothered me. It bothered me. That started a series of events that destroyed the music and the opportunity to carry that up to a different level. My friend Maynard went to Los Angeles and started a really renowned band that has made it really, really, really big. Some of the things that we worked on ended up on their second record, and they gave me some credit for that, which I didn't feel I deserved. Another one of our friends, Jillian, went on to get a really, really lucrative acting position. And our friend Charlie went on to become the art director of Cream Magazine in New York City. So I'm watching my peers, my friends, see the fruits of their labors and have some amazing stories and lives to talk about. And here I am languishing with alcoholism, not being able to realize the broken promises, the missed opportunities, the failed dreams. And I drink over these things. So I turned my back on the whole thing, and I went out for... Let's see. I've never done this before, so I'm trying to figure out the years in my head here. But it was about a 20-year stretch. And in that 20 years, some of it in Michigan, some of it in Southern California, hospitals, jails, institutions, homelessness. I finally, my friend talked me to flying out here, and I left Michigan with a leather jacket and a guitar and about $40 and a half pint. I got to LAX, and these guys immediately went on tour, so here I am in the middle of Los Angeles, don't know anyone, completely alcoholic at this point, and I hit the streets, and I lived at 6th and San Pedro in downtown Los Angeles, where they don't come up and bum cigarettes. They say, what size are those shoes? I'm like, and if you show any fear, they'll just take all your stuff, you know. And it's humiliating, devastating. It wasn't enough yet. There was more. So I finally, after a few months of living there, I said, I got to get out of here, and I walked to the Santa Monica Pier. And I toured all the way down the coastline like you'd skip a rock across the pond and ended up in San Diego. But along the way, I was in Los Angeles County Jail. I was in Orange County Jail several times. They would pull me over walking in Orange County. Get on the curb, take off your shoes. We know you know people in the area that are doing this and this and this and this. And I'm like, dude, I'm just a drunk. So I can remember walking through an Albertsons, and I wouldn't steal so much, but I'd definitely crack a fifth and walk down the aisle and put it back on the shelf. And if I was really, really, really brave, I would come back 8 hours later and finish it. And that happened a couple times. I did get arrested a bunch of times in Orange County. And this one, it really, really, really tops it all, because I had finally gotten a job. I went through a little detox. I got into a sober living. I'm starting to do this thing, but I'm still not really doing this thing. I'm just trying to breathe a little bit. And I got a little car. And in an unthinking moment, I picked up a drink, and I got arrested twice in the same day for drunk driving. And people ask me, how does that happen? They let me go. 4 hours, kick me out, get the car, go back to work, try and pretend everything's cool, go out on my break. Two in one day. One for each parent. And that is literally one for each parent. And that still wasn't enough. This went on for a couple more years. I finally, at the very bottom of Orange County, lived on San Clemente Beach for a summer. I lived on a pylon under the Santa Monica Pier for a summer. Thank God I didn't have a guitar in Santa Monica. I'd still be collecting quarters on the 3rd Street Promenade. But I couldn't take it anymore. I had to do something. And I was talking to somebody earlier outside about I woke up in a detox at the bottom of Orange County, and they were pointing at me, and they were kind of snickering, and I'm like, what? What? Well, you're the one. And I said, I'm the one what? What did I do? He said, well, you flagged a cop down and asked him to bring you to detox, and that's how you got here. So I'm having a moment of clarity and a straight blackout. Don't remember any of it. But I was suffering, and they were gracious enough to do that. Saved my life. So I got to do something. The ladies at that detox said, there's a bed at the Salvation Army in San Diego. Do you want it? I said, yes. And still wasn't enough. I was still drinking. But I'm waiting to get on the bus, and I realize that I don't have enough money to get on this bus. And this little Mexican kid turned around and put 2 quarters in my hand. And this was God. I'll never see this kid again. I'll never be able to say thank you so much. You saved my life. It's just one of those things, you know. It reinforces the little idea that maybe something's possible. So I get to San Diego. I go through 6 months of the Salvation Army. I'm the first graduate of the year 2000, so there's a date. Get into a sober living, get a sponsor, start going to meetings, and I went back to school. And halfway through the semester, this is a good one, George. Halfway through that semester, my sponsor's wife was an attorney, and they asked me about my past, and I said, well, yeah, I got arrested a bunch of times up there. There's some unfinished business. And she goes, well, I'll look it up for you. What's your social? And I'm like, oh, fuck. Well, you got a little unpaid fine up there, but they just want the money. So I'm halfway through my semester. And there are 8 warrants for my arrest, about $120,000 if I want to see daylight. They come to visit me. She's crying, and I'm like trying to reassure her it's okay because this is necessary. I was sick of running. I was sick of hiding. I was sick of all the bullshit, you know, just on top of. So my professors from college are sending my homework to Orange County Jail. And I finally get out. I don't know. It was a couple months. I think I did 50 days or whatever. I get back and I go and see these people and I go to all the professors and they're like, no problem, just do this. But then I go to my algebra teacher. This is a big class. And he said, I don't see how you could make up that amount of time. You've missed almost 8 weeks. And I said, well, what would I have to do? He said, take the tests. So in 10 days, I took 4 tests in the final and scored 2nd in that class. I had no idea that I was capable of doing that. I had no idea. You know, I learned that I could write. And I do that daily now. But I didn't know these things about myself. I was oblivious to a lot of that stuff. So don't ever underestimate. I was selling myself so short. And I'll talk about that when I finally hit the ranch. Anyway, I get done with school and it's summer break and I picked up a drink. And didn't think about it. The clamor of worldly things is presenting itself. And I've made no plans on what do I do if that happens. I just was going to meetings and not drinking. And that day came, and it will come. And it will come again. I think I drank for about 10 days, ended up in detox, ended up in treatment again. And I went to Pathfinders. So now I got Sally under my belt. Now I'm doing Pathfinders, and I'm like 50 guys. Oh, fuck. All of the things that happened through all of that treatment, but now I'm starting to learn a little more about what really is my dilemma, and that's lack of power. That I don't have the ability to not take a drink when that thought, feeling, whatever that is, comes. I do not have a defense against it. And once I start drinking, then the drinking starts drinking, and I'm not even part of the equation anymore. I can't tell you how many times I've walked to the liquor store and my brain is screaming, not again, come on, dude, what the fuck? And my skin is saying, oh no, this is where we're going right now. And that is a horrifying feeling. And I was drinking over that stuff. I did not have an answer for it. So again, I get out of Pathfinders and I picked up a drink. I had a sponsor, good sponsor. He's an old pilot turned psychologist. But I wasn't doing what was needed, sufficient enough to give me a daily reprieve from picking up a drink. And that day came, and I ended up in detox again, just straight suffering. And I went to the San Diego Freedom Ranch this time. So now I have the Sally, Pathfinders, and the Freedom Ranch going on, meeting all kinds of new people. But I am learning along the way. So I finished that, and here it comes again. I started school again, and about halfway through that semester, I think I made it all the way through that semester, but the summertime, I'm living in Coronado. It's like Mayberry. You either hate it or you love it. And I picked up a drink. Now, I'm friends with some people on Coronado Island, and my buddy Chris is coming in and sleeping in front of my door to see where I'm going because he knows how serious this is. He's sober. He knows the drill. And he's trying to find a place that would take me, and we couldn't find it wasn't available at that time. We went everywhere. That's what he told me. But finally, he flagged a cop down. And he's like, I know he's got a bottle in his pocket. Can't you do something? And he's going, officer's like, he's not doing anything wrong. I can't do anything to him. So I had been living in Chris's house off and on while I was living there through my schooling. And we had a change jar. And you put money in, take money out, whatever, do your laundry. And I hit the change jar, and I'm on my way to the liquor store, and the cops roll up, and they charge me with a first-degree burglary. It's my fucking money. They're going to strike me on this. So this is a serious crime in their eyes. To me, it's a handful of quarters, you know. Anyway, they let me out of jail, and I had asked if they would send me back to the Freedom Ranch so that I could recover, get help, learn more, whatever. And I would have signed anything to get out of George Bailey. I mean, they put me in with all the old men at first. That was pretty cool. It was pretty casual. You didn't have to do a lot. And then there was this one day that I heard somebody talking some shit, and I talked shit right back, and then I uncovered my head, and it was an officer, and he said, roll your shit up. I'm like, come on, dude, I didn't know it was you. I wouldn't have... Roll your shit up. Ended up in the Thunderdome next door. And it's funny how God works, because as soon as they announce my name, I'm walking into this place, and I know what's going on. Orange County was no joke. And this guy walks up to me, and he said, what's your last name? And I told him, he said, so is mine. He said, come with me. And didn't have a problem. There were many of those times, and I believe it's the hand of God. I'm sitting in Orange County jail, and I'm waiting to get a jumpsuit and 30 hours intake to get a rack. And I'm sitting next to this guy, and he's fully tatted up, and obviously Chicano. And the guy next to me is putting on a nice fresh pair of shoes. Reminds me of L.A. And the guy takes his shoes. I'm like, oh, shit. So then he looks at me and goes, oh, so you're from Detroit, huh? I'm like, how do you know that? How do you know that? Turned out to be that I didn't have a problem that stint in Orange County Jail because of that situation. I believe this is the hand of God. Anyway, this went on and on and on until finally they let me out of jail in San Diego here. So George Martinez here picked me up from George Bailey and took me to the San Diego Freedom Ranch. Now, I can't tell you how devastating all of this stuff is if you look at it over a lifetime. The first 4 weeks that I was locked up, I was reading the book, making a commitment to myself again. The last 2 weeks, all I could think about was the $20 that was on my books, and that I was going to the liquor store as soon as they cut me loose. And Georgie picked me up, and we didn't stop. And I would have bolted. I would have bolted. And I believe it's the hand of God. So I get to the San Diego Freedom Ranch, and I know everybody up there, Rick Chaplin. You gutter drunk wino, you don't deserve nothing. I love this man. Anyway, weed patch wino, that's what he would call me. So anyway, third day there, I'm just kicking the shit out of myself for having failed again. One more time, when's this going to end? I realized what was going on. This was a different moment of clarity. This was when I made a decision in the third step that I was actually going to do whatever it would take at this point so that I didn't have to continue living this life. And I started writing out the fourth step. I asked Mike Huffaker, I don't want to leave. He said, we'll put you to work, dude. Don't worry. I stayed a year. But anyway, I stayed in this book. I would do these exercises. I would make them up for myself. I went and I found all the different places in the book, especially in a vision for the second chapter. There is a solution. The great fact, the tremendous fact, the central fact. It's the chapter of facts. And I found myself in that chapter. Anyway, I started writing this. I made a list of all the resentments. Ronald Reagan was the first one. Prick. Good one to practice on. Good one to practice on. But I remembered everybody's name. I wrote it. If it came into my head, I wrote their name down. I set that list aside. I made a list of all the relationships, one-night stands, whatever. Remembered all their names. Set that aside. I made a list of all my fears. And there were many. Not being able to live up to my father, my potential. All of these things ended up on these lists. Set that aside. I made a list of everyone I had ever stole from or borrowed money from and didn't pay it back because it had bothered me. I set that aside. I made a list of everyone I had ever worked for. I set that aside. I made a list of all of the different organizations, institutions, jails, ambulance rides, whatever I could remember, and I set that aside. And I made a list of all the regrets, things that didn't make it on all of these lists. So then I'm looking at all this stuff, and it's basically everyone I've ever come in contact with. I'm the common denominator. Just overwhelming. The evidence was so overwhelming. How am I ever going to make this right? Most people will give up. Left up just to me, there's no way. But with the strength of God, AA, good friends, showing up for the commitments, even when you'd rather be somewhere else, being to work on time, all of these principles that my father had instilled in me all these years that I failed to live up to, I understood. So I didn't find a whole lot of relief just knowing that stuff. It wasn't until I was sticking the money in the envelopes and sending them through the mail to the people that I had. That's when I started finding the relief in the ninth step. When I'd make the phone call, hey, I'm sorry, but do you remember that night somebody stole your birthday money? That was me. You've carried that for 25 years? Yeah. And I need to make it right. What do I need to do? And she said, well, take yourself out to dinner. I'm like, that didn't make sense to me. I needed to be punished for this stuff. Which I had already been punished. I was punishing myself. So anyway, made all of the, as many of these amends as I possibly could, and I started the day after 9/11. My sponsor handed me the phone and said, start calling these people, and I figured, well, we're all doomed anyways. What the fuck? That's what I thought, you know. Oh, shit, they're not going to stop it. They're going to do it. Oh. And I got the majority of these people, I got a really true good response from that they realized what was going on with me, and they had watched me through all of this. And there's a line in the book, somewhere in the beginning of the book, in the doctor's opinion or Bill's story, it says, if you had presented yourself as a patient at our hospital, I would not have taken you. People like you are too heartbreaking. And I realized what all those people were feeling as they watched my slow demise. And it really solidified that this was so important, that if I was ever going to live up to my potential, ever going to honor my father's good name, that I would need to do these things daily and continue on. You know, it's really funny. I'm thinking about the children I work with. I work for a nonprofit in City Heights, and these kids are underprivileged. They don't have anything. Nobody's going to spend the time of day on these kids. But they teach me about myself, and we use art and music and as therapy. And they won a bunch of awards at the Del Mar Fair. So we're taking a lot of these kids to the Del Mar Fair to see their awards. And they grab me up and say, "Christopher, we want to go on one of these rides." And I'm like, "Which one?" And they point to the nastiest, biggest. And I'm like, "All right, you know," and I'm shutting whatever. And it took everything I had to keep my eyes open on that ride. Everything I had. And that's how I feel right now. I feel the same way right now. I have to force myself to look. Whereas before, blotting out reality to the bitter end as best I can, or accept spiritual help. So, AA has raised me. I lost my parents when I was 17 years old. I've been on my own ever since. So all of you have become brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, parents, grandparents, and have helped raise me. And my indebtedness, there's no way to pay that back other than to play an active role and continue to do the same thing that these people have taught me, to bring those principles into my heart so that it's sufficient to not have to pick up a drink. It's become very simple, and I keep it very simple. I go to meetings, I have a sponsor, I sponsor people, I have commitments at meetings. Same thing I did at the very beginning, I still do today. So if anybody's having second thoughts, anybody has any misgivings, I had to retrain my brain, and I would put it in timeout. Go away from me, you evil little prick. I will call you when you're needed. Seriously, just like that. Go away, dude. Just give it a rest, you know? That still happens, but it's not as bad as it was. Or it's the opposite. You need to get your ass over here right now. We need to do this adult stuff here right now. So I've learned how to do that through AA, the people in and around AA. It has shown me a brighter way to live. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. Never thought I would say that. Wouldn't trade it for the world. So anyway, everybody have a good night. I hope you have some.